So, if sumo wrestlers, school teachers, and daycare parents all cheat, are we to assume that mankind is innately and universally corrupt? And if so, how corrupt? The answer may lie in bagels. Consider the true story of a man named Paul Feldman. Once upon a time, Feldman dreamed big dreams. Trained as an agricultural economist, he wanted to tackle world hunger. Instead, he took a job in Washington, analyzing weapons expenditures for the U.S. Navy. This was in 1962. For the next 20-odd years, he did more of the same. He held senior-level jobs and earned good money, but he wasn't fully engaged in his work. At the office Christmas party, colleagues would introduce him to their wives not as the head of the public research group, which is what he was, but as the guy who brings in the bagels. The bagels had begun as a casual gesture, a boss treating his employees whenever they won a research contract. Then he made it a habit. Every Friday, he would bring in some bagels, a serrated knife, and cream cheese. When employees from neighboring floors heard about the bagels, they wanted some too. Eventually, he was bringing in 15 dozen bagels a week. In order to recoup his costs, he set out a cash basket and a sign with the suggested price. His collection rate was about 95%. He attributed the underpayment to oversight, not fraud. In 1984, when his research institute fell under new management, Feldman took a look at his career and he grimaced. He decided to quit his job and sell bagels. His economist friends thought he had lost his mind, but his wife supported him. The last of their three children was finishing college, and they had retired their mortgage. Driving around the office parks that encircle Washington, he solicited customers with a simple pitch. Early in the morning, he would deliver some bagels and a cash basket to a company's snack room. He would return before lunch to pick up the money and the leftovers. It was an honor system commerce scheme, and it worked. Within a few years, Feldman was delivering 8,400 bagels a week to 140 companies and earning as much as he had ever made as a research analyst. He had thrown off the shackles of cubicle life and made himself happy. He had also, quite without meaning to, designed a beautiful economic experiment. From the beginning, Feldman kept rigorous data on his business. So, by measuring the money collected against the bagels taken, he found it possible to tell, down to the penny, just how honest his customers were. Did they steal from him? If so, what were the characteristics of a company that stole versus a company that didn't? Under what circumstances did people tend to steal more or less? As it happens, Feldman's accidental study provides a window onto a form of cheating that has long stymied academics, white-collar crime. Yes, shorting the bagel man is white-collar crime, writ however small. It might seem ludicrous to address as large and intractable a problem as white-collar crime through the life of a bagel man, but often a small and simple question can help chisel away at the biggest problems. Despite all the attention paid to rogue companies like Enron, academics know very little about the practicalities of white-collar crime. The reason? There are no good data. A key fact of white-collar crime is that we hear about only the very slim fraction of people who are caught cheating. Most embezzlers lead quiet and theoretically happy lives. Employees who steal company property are rarely detected. With street crime, meanwhile, that is not the case. A mugging or a burglary or a murder is usually tallied whether or not the criminal is caught. A street crime has a victim who typically reports the crime to the police, who generate data, which in turn generate thousands of academic papers by criminologists, sociologists, and economists. But white-collar crime presents no obvious victim. From whom exactly did the masters of Enron steal? And how can you measure something if you don't know to whom it happened, or with what frequency, or in what magnitude? Paul Feldman's bagel business was different. It did present a victim. The victim was Paul Feldman. When he started out, he expected a 95% payment rate based on the experience at his own office. But just as crime tends to be low on a street where a police car is parked, the 95% rate was artificially high. Feldman's presence had deterred theft. Not only that, but those bagel eaters knew the provider and had feelings, presumably good ones, about him. A broad swath of psychological and economic research has shown that people will pay different amounts for the same item depending on who is providing it. The economist Richard Thaler, in his 1985 Beer on the Beach study, showed that a thirsty sunbather would pay $2.65 for a beer delivered from a resort hotel, but only $1.50 for the same beer if it came from a shabby grocery store. In the real world, Feldman learned to settle for less than 95%. He came to consider a company honest if its payment rate was above 90%. He considered a rate between 80 and 90% annoying but tolerable. If a company habitually paid below 80%, Feldman might post a hectoring note, like this one. The cost of bagels has gone up dramatically since the beginning of the year. Unfortunately, the number of bagels that disappear without being paid for has also gone up. Don't let that continue. I don't imagine that you would teach your children to cheat, so why do it yourselves? In the beginning, Feldman left behind an open basket for the cash, but too often the money vanished. Then he tried a coffee can with a money slot in its plastic lid, which also proved too tempting. In the end, he resorted to making small plywood boxes with a slot cut into the top. The wooden box has worked well. Each year, he drops off about 7,000 boxes and loses, on average, just one to theft. This is an intriguing statistic. The same people who routinely steal more than 10% of his bagels almost never stoop to stealing his money box, a tribute to the nuanced social calculus of theft. From Feldman's perspective, an office worker who eats a bagel without paying is committing a crime. But the office worker probably doesn't think so. This distinction likely has less to do with the admittedly small amount of money involved – Feldman's bagels cost $1 each, cream cheese included – than with the context of the crime. The same office worker who fails to pay for his bagel might also help himself to a long slurp of soda while filling a glass in a self-serve restaurant, but he is very unlikely to leave the restaurant without paying. So what do the bagel data have to say? In recent years, there have been two noteworthy trends in the overall payment rate. The first was a long, slow decline that began in 1992. By the summer of 2001, the overall rate had slipped to about 87%. But immediately after September 11th of that year, the rate spiked a full 2% and hasn't slipped much since. If a 2% gain in payment doesn't sound like much, think of it this way. The non-payment rate fell from 13 to 11%, which amounts to a 15% decline in theft. Because many of Feldman's customers are affiliated with national security, there may have been a patriotic element to this 9/11 effect, or it may have represented a more general surge in empathy. The data also show that smaller offices are more honest than big ones. An office with a few dozen employees generally outpays by 3 to 5% an office with a few hundred employees. This may seem counterintuitive. In a bigger office, a bigger crowd is bound to convene around the bagel table, providing more witnesses to make sure you drop your money in the box. But in the big office, small office comparison, bagel crime seems to mirror street crime. There is far less street crime per capita in rural areas than in cities, in large part because a rural criminal is more likely to be known and, therefore, caught. Also, a smaller community tends to exert greater social incentives against crime, the main one being shame. The bagel data also reflect how much personal mood seems to affect honesty. Weather, for instance, is a major factor. Unseasonably pleasant weather inspires people to pay at a higher rate. Unseasonably cold weather, meanwhile, makes people cheat prolifically. So do heavy rain and wind. Worst are the holidays. The week of Christmas produces a 2% drop in payment rates. Again, a 15% increase in theft, an effect on the same magnitude, in reverse, as that of 9/11. Thanksgiving is nearly as bad. The week of Valentine's Day is also lousy, as is the week straddling April 15th. There are, however, a few good holidays: the 4th of July, Labor Day, and Columbus Day. What's the difference in these two sets of holidays? The low-cheating holidays represent little more than an extra day off from work. the high cheating holidays are those fraught with miscellaneous anxieties and the high expectations of loved ones. Feldman has also reached some of his own conclusions about honesty, based more on his experience than the data. He has come to believe that morale is a big factor, that an office is more honest when the employees like their boss and their work. He also believes that employees further up the corporate ladder cheat more than those down below. He got this idea after delivering for years to one company spread out over three floors, an executive floor on top and two lower floors with sales, service, and administrative employees. Feldman wondered if perhaps the executives cheated out of an overdeveloped sense of entitlement. What he didn't consider is that perhaps cheating was how they got to be executives. If morality represents the way we would like the world to work, and economics represents how it actually does work, then the story of Feldman's bagel business lies at the very intersection of morality and economics. Yes, a lot of people steal from him, but the vast majority, even though no one is watching over them, do not. This outcome may surprise some people, including Feldman's economist friends, who counseled him 20 years ago that his honor system scheme would never work. But it would not have surprised Adam Smith. In fact, the theme of Smith's first book, The Theory of Moral Sentiments, was the innate honesty of mankind. Smith wrote, "How selfish soever man may be supposed, there are evidently some principles in his nature which interest him in the fortune of others, and render their happiness necessary to him, though he derives nothing from it except the pleasure of seeing it." There is a tale, The Ring of Gyges, that Feldman sometimes tells his economist friends. It comes from Plato's Republic. A student named Glaucon offered the story in response to a lesson by Socrates, who, like Adam Smith, argued that people are generally good even without enforcement. But Glaucon, like Feldman's economist friends, disagreed. Glaucon told a story about a shepherd named Gyges who stumbled upon a secret cavern with a corpse inside that wore a ring. When Gyges put on the ring, he found that it made him invisible. With no one able to monitor his behavior, Gyges proceeded to do woeful things, seduce the queen, murder the king, and so on. Glaucon's story posed a moral question. Could any man resist the temptation of evil if he knew his acts could not be witnessed? Glaucon seemed to think the answer was no. But Paul Feldman sides with Socrates and Adam Smith, for he knows that the answer, at least 87% of the time, is yes. From the New York Times Magazine, Levitt is the first to say that some of his topics, a study of discrimination on the weakest link, border on the trivial. But he has shown other economists just how well their tools can make sense of the real world. Levitt is considered a demigod, one of the most creative people in economics and maybe in all social science, says Colin F. Kammerer, an economist at the California Institute of Technology. He represents something that everyone thinks they will be when they go to grad school in econ, but usually they have the creative spark bored out of them by endless math, namely, a kind of intellectual detective trying to figure stuff out.